Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.
Everybody, this is Roz and Wits. We're here at the Sporting Edge, and it is time to break down that amazing
like
Super Bowl.
Wits and Roz a little better.
You like Wits and Roz?
It rolls off the tongue a little bit better.
It was your show first, so you know what? Just for that, everybody, welcome. We are here with Wits and Roz. How about that, Xander? You like that one better?
Yeah, it sounds a lot better. But what sounds the best is that Tom Brady wins his fifth career Super Bowl. I think established himself as probably the best quarterback of all time. I know Joe Montana came out and said, you know, it's not right to, you know, compare him to the best of all time. There really is, you know, it's hard to compare people, but I think Tom Brady cemented himself as the best quarterback of all time with that performance against the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday.
No, I completely agree. I think, one, I was close to turning off the TV, Wits. I'm a betting man. I know you are
honestly
a betting man. So money was flying away from me. But we are rich Sporting Edge listeners. We were okay. We made it out alive.
I made up for all my playoff losses with that game, and it was extremely exciting.
It was extremely close, so a little worrisome, but extremely close. But you're right, Xander. I think it's not questionable anymore for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. I think they are the two greatest at what they do. That comeback was fitting. I think it's even more fitting that he threw for 466 yards, setting now the Super Bowl passing yards record. I think that's fantastic. Another fun fact that I thought was interesting was James White had 14 receptions, had three touchdowns. The 14 receptions is significant because that sets the record for receptions in the Super Bowl, and that's now held by a running back. So I think it was an interesting second half. I think I didn't care about the commercials, Xander. I know you probably were checking them out here and there, maybe gambling a little bit on whether it was going to be a food commercial or car commercial.
I passed that part of my life.
Okay.
Gambling on commercials.
We're past that part. But I think it was really cool to see how dynamic this Patriots team could be in the second half and how they weren't willing to give up, being down 25 at a certain point. So I was impressed, Xander. I know me and you were happy just because we got another correct pick. I went 8-3 on the year, or on the not the year, on the postseason. And you're right. You did a little bit better, Wits.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got the biggest game, so nothing wrong with that. But yeah, this game was really the tale of two halves. I mean, the first half the Patriots looked absolutely lost, and I honestly thought the game was over after that pick six. You know, the Patriots could not do anything right. The Falcons were clicking on all cylinders, and yeah, you know, I just found this fact this morning. It absolutely blew my mind. Since 1991, teams are 4-1057 when up by 25 plus points in the NFL. So this means that the Falcons had a 99.96% chance of winning that game and found a way to lose it. So when you put that into that sort of perspective, you know, 99.96%, I think most people would bet their lives on those kind of numbers. But, you know, this was just not the night for the Falcons. They did everything right, you know, except the end of the game. Clock management was questionable. The Patriots, you know, obviously had to make some good plays, and they just didn't stop. I mean, Dont'a Hightower, I thought, played spectacular for the Patriots defense. And, you know what? Kyle Shanahan came out and he said he doesn't regret. He wouldn't take back any of the play calls that he made down the stretch. But Roz, I have a hard time believing that he honestly thinks that he wouldn't have ran the ball when they had, you know, the Falcons had the ball in the Patriots 22 when they took a sack and a holding penalty and ended up punting when they could have, you know, kicked a field goal and went up 11 and essentially ended that game. So I have a really hard time believing Kyle Shanahan, you know, really believes what he said.
Yeah, so I was looking over everything and I took some time because the Super Bowl to me was a little funky in how it turned out, and I for the longest time couldn't figure out. It didn't seem like the Falcons blew that game. And it's like, how do you ask that? Because they blew a 25-point lead. But if you think about it, you're right. They should have probably run with Devontae Freeman after that Julio Jones catch. And by the way, Julio Jones, the numbers weren't like eye-popping or anything, but the catches he made in that game were just fantastic.
He only got targeted, I think, 4 or 5 times.
But those catches, those catches were fantastic. It was the unbelievable. He had a hurt toe, and he was tapping his toe like it was his job on the sideline, keeping plays alive. And you're right. At that point, they should have run the ball with Devontae Freeman. But other, like, the big complaint is the sack and then the sack fumble that occurred. But you have to remember there's also a holding penalty that knocked him out of field goal range. It's those like are three like kind of small plays, but they're up 25 and they kept playing. And I think what really dictated the Patriots coming back was keeping Atlanta off the field. So it wasn't even on Shanahan completely. I mean, the Patriots had the ball three times more than the Falcons.
I know, but after they're up 25 points, they ran the ball 5 times the rest of the game after that. I mean, not even watching the game, I got to think that's a little bit of a problem. And I agree with you. They kept the Falcons' defense on the field way too long, and they got tired down the stretch. And then, you know, we had another one of those plays. You know, 20 years from now, you're still going to remember the Julian Edelman catch. I mean, if that wasn't, you know, David Tyree-esque, you know, in the situation in the game, you know, it was absolutely unbelievable. And the fact that not only the Patriots won this game, but covered, it was a Cinderella story. I mean, if they were to have come back all the way and won that game by 1 point, we would have all been, you know, almost had it. They won the game. They didn't get the cover, but down 16, they get the two scores, the two-point conversions. They come out, win the coin toss, and the only way they cover that game is if they score a touchdown on the first drive, or otherwise maybe they push, but they do not cover. It was a magical game. I think a game unlike anyone will ever see again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the cover is fantastic. I was worried about the entire game, the numbers that were flying on the Super Bowl board. I mean, if you played Super Bowl squares on Sunday, you're all over the place. I mean, I was nervous. When you asked for a team to go for two, Xander, we knew what it was like when the Chiefs were unable to accomplish that earlier in the postseason. So you get a little worried. And the Patriots were able to do it twice. In fact, I thought the first two-point conversion was just a masterful play. The direct snap.
I thought it was a bad snap.
So did I, and I was concerned, but it was unbelievable. And then an excellent play. They were going to get two cracks at it anyways because of the penalty that occurred on the second two-point conversion. But it was just, you're right, it's phenomenal. I played wide receiver, so seeing that Julian Edelman thing, that's just like never die type attitude right there. I mean, that ball should have hit the ground 4 or 5 times. And then there was a little bit of magic there, Witz. If you watch the replay, that ball looked like it floats a little longer than it should. It almost looks like gravity kind of used all of its power on Lady Gaga when she jumped off the top of the stadium. And but that ball seemed to have floated there just a little bit, and Edelman was able to make what I think will be the next most historical catch behind the David Tyree catch.
Right. I mean, that catch, David Tyree, the catch that I think Jermaine Kearse made, the last time the Patriots were in the Super Bowl, I mean, those plays, they just kind of make you think, you know, how big and how, you know, it's hard to describe in words. I mean, what that play meant to that game. If he doesn't catch that ball, I don't know if the Patriots win, but
I agree.
You know, he caught it and he knew that he caught it right away. And you know, Dan Quinn, I don't really know if he should have challenged. I mean, you took one look at that replay; the ball never really hit the ground, but you know what? They were kind of losing that game. They were losing control. But that's all the time we have here on the Sporting Edge. If you missed the show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. We'll be back after the break for a little more Super Bowl recap and a look into next year's season. Bye, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Roz and Witz here at the Sporting Edge. I know I switch it back around. I do like being the dominant one. I like being having Roz first. We're joined today by Garrett Haywood. I'm very excited about this. He is a college football expert, also knows a great deal about the NBA, and he's going to help us out finish up this recap on the Super Bowl that just happened this week. So, Garrett, we ask all of our guests this. We're locker room guys on the show. So if you were to go in a locker room, say like a Lifetime Fitness, I don't know what you guys have up in Columbus, but what pro athlete or college athlete do you want to hang out with the locker room, take a little steam with?
Yeah, thanks. Well, first off, I'd like to say I'm happy to join the show. Real pumped about it. Locker room guy, there's a lot of guys that come to mind. First off, you think Gronk. You got to think my old boy, Johnny Manziel, RIP, but he's gone right now. But I'd have to say, being from Columbus, big Ohio State guy myself, I'm going to ride with my boy Zeke. I remember seeing him out a couple times at the bars. He always seems like he's a good guy to hang around. Good time. So got to keep rolling with Zeke as he pounds the rock for those Cowboys.
Absolutely. Do you think he's a hot tub guy or more of a steam guy?
Zeke's definitely a steam guy.
Steam guy. You like that, Witz? You're a big steamer.
Yeah, I'm a big steam guy. I mean, you know, some days I don't feel like working out. You know, take a steam in a hot tub, get a sweat going. Clothes are wet, that means they had a good workout.
Absolutely. All right, so Garrett, we've been talking about how exceptional the Super Bowl was, and we were talking most recently about the Julian Edelman catch. What did that mean to you, seeing that catch? Like, did you know the Patriots were going to win at that point, or were you like still kind of riding the Falcons a little bit?
Yeah, well, the first thing that came to my mind was finally the Patriots caught a break, and yeah, that kind of seems or not normal, thinking the Patriots always win. But if you think back to these other Super Bowls, you got the Tyreek Hill catch with on the helmet. You got the Seahawks catch.
The Malcolm Butler interception. Or the Jermaine Curse, you're right.
Yeah,
the big catch.
Set up that Malcolm Butler, you got to remember that was an unbelievable catch before that, where he was on the ground and it just fell into his lap. So I'd say finally they caught a break with the whole catching thing, and they were able to grind it out there with Tom Brady.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I mean, you know, they were basically two fluke plays, the Patriots, from winning 7 Super Bowls. You think about that Tyree catch and then Mario Manningham a few years later. I mean, that was another great play by Eli Manning. But, you know, Roz, I wanted to get your thoughts. End of the game, trophy presentation, Robert Kraft comes out and says, you know, a lot has transpired over the last 2 years. I don't think that needs any explanation, but I want to say to our fans, our brilliant coaching staff, our amazing players, who are so spectacular, this unequivocally the sweetest. I basically took that as a fuck you, Roger, and you know, here we are again, back on top. You know, did I read that correctly?
I have my take on it, but I kind of want to hear Garrett's take on the Robert Kraft speech, as well as seeing Roger Goodell hand the trophy to Robert Kraft.
Yeah, Robert Kraft, I mean, that guy is the leader when it comes to the NFL. All their owners, him and Jerry Jones come to mind, but I mean, I think with a guy like that, always being in control, always calling the shots, whenever someone comes back at him and has that authority over him, it kind of just knocks him in a weird way. So, yeah, I think it was a big F you to him. Like, I'm done. We still, despite of you, we still won the championship. So,
yeah, I well deserved. I think it was great that Kraft went out and did that, because I don't know about you, and not many people were discussing this. This was more in my inner monologue while watching the trophy like celebration. Roger Goodell left the stage very fast. He got off as fast as he could, as well as I missed the speeches from Goodell. He goes, "What an excellent game. We've got the best team in the world now standing up, taking this trophy." Instead, he just kind of goes, "Congratulations, Patriots. Here's your trophy." Walks off the stage.
Kind of cowardly, honestly.
Absolutely. And that was what everyone was waiting to see. I mean, I guess manned up. I'm using some air quotes here. You can't see me because we're in the studio. But Roger Goodell is a coward, and I know he ended up going and giving the Super Bowl MVP trophy to Tom Brady as well. But it wasn't sentimental, and you know, you don't need to be sentimental when you're a commissioner. I know you're a busy man and everything, but it's a special moment winning a Super Bowl, regardless if it's your first or your fifth. And he kind of just downplayed it. It was pretty quick. You know what? He's not even the prettiest guy in the world, so it didn't bother me that he wasn't on screen very long, but I'd like them to be in the background, kind of getting all of Robert Kraft's crop dusting, because I'm assuming he's a farter up there. But it was rough, and I'm just happy the Patriots got their words in. Robert Kraft got everything he needed to say. But yeah, it was a great Super Bowl. Xander, is there anything else pressing you about this Super Bowl before we kind of give a whole general recap of football as a whole?
No, I mean, I think that about sums it up. I mean, Goodell, you know, I think he got the message right when he took the mic and gave the trophy to Robert Kraft. I mean, you could barely hear him over the boos. You know, it was actually pretty funny. So I understand why he got out of there really quick. But, I mean, the moment was so much more about Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft, and what that team was able to do. But my last question is, Roz, who deserved the Super Bowl MVP more? Was it Tom Brady or was it James White? Because I felt like Tom Brady played an amazing game, but I thought James White might have deserved the MVP honors. It was kind of just a capstone award for Tom Brady and his whole career rather than for this particular game.
Well, I'm always under the idea that if there's no Tom Brady, there's no win there. If there's no Tom Brady, there's no 14 catches there for James White.
That's true. But
and in a bad pass at the end of overtime that almost was an interception led to the run by James White. So they wanted Brady to score that game-winning touchdown. He just missed the pass, and Belichick's smarter than the next. I was waiting for that, too.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been a nice traditional thing. But I'm going to go with Tom Brady. What are you thinking over here, Garrett? Are you a James White guy, or are you going Tom Brady with this?
No, Tom Brady is the GOAT. He solidified that after the game. I think one thing that people didn't really take into account when looking at the James White stats is they were down by 20 points or whatever you want to call it the entire second half. LeGarrette Blount did not play. I think they ran the ball like two or three or four times in that second half, and that's it. So he was a factor. He is the passing back. So those little catches that he had, those are basically their run plays without them, you know, wanting to go down on the clock all the time on the second half there.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think LeGarrette was maybe lighting up in the locker room. You know, say maybe next year he comes out in the fourth quarter and, you know, they got a chance to win the game.
Yeah, he fumbled that ball and instantly went to go find the nearest blunt to smoke. So
Le'Veon gave him a visit at halftime.
Le'Veon was there. So that's pretty much what we got from the Super Bowl. It was an exciting football season. I can't really say the postseasons were great. The games were all blowouts except for, of course, the Super Bowl and, of course, my Packers win over the Cowboys. But other than that, it's been a great football season. I know Garrett, who we said is a college football expert, I want your kind of take. We're going to lump together football because we're sad here at the Sporting Edge that for the next couple months, all we can bring you is draft updates and potential free agent moves. But as a football whole, and I know you're a big Ohio State guy being from Columbus, I know it was sad that they didn't make it to the finals and it was a rough game against Clemson, but can you sum up Ohio State as well as NCAA football as a whole this year?
Yeah.
What it meant to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So to dive into Ohio State, this season we kind of looked at it as a rebuilding year. Ohio State has the youngest team in all of college football. Yes, Urban Meyer is an elite recruiter. They have elite guys there. Like you see, Malik Hooker came out of nowhere, first-year starter, top 10 pick. You got Marshawn Lattimore, first-year starter, projected top 10 pick by some of the boards. So you got guys in the cupboards there ready to go. But being a freshman, being a sophomore is still being a freshman or sophomore. You need that experience there. And you can see that with the teams that advance with Clemson and Alabama. You see that experience senior-heavy team or at least junior-heavy team. So you don't really see the young team really rise up till maybe the next year, except in 2014 when Ohio State came out of nowhere. But, you know, I'm not really going to go into that right now. I'm sure people are sick of hearing that.
So seeing how this year worked out and – I like the playoff format and everything. Is there room to make it a larger playoff? Is four teams enough for you just because you Ohio State fans know you're a top four team every year? Or do you think there should be more mediocrity and there should be maybe a Michigan in there?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely one of the more controversial topics as of late. I think we can all agree that the four-team playoff is way better than the old BCS.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't think that's even a question. But going into eight, I know as an Ohio State fan, even when they play maybe Illinois on the road, that's still a big game because if you drop that game, you could be out of the top four. So I still like having the season and being like that. Every single game matters, so I like the 4-2.
No, absolutely, and I think that is a point that every single game matters, and that's what's really cool about college football. So we'll see where it goes in the future, and we're going to come back here at the next segment on the Sporting Edge, wrapping up a little bit more of football because we're going to miss you so much, football. So come back. We're here at LibertyTalk.fm. This is Roz and Witz joined by Garrett. We'll see you next segment, everybody.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
What's up, everybody? Here back at the Sporting Edge. I'm here with the usual suspect, Roz, and our good friend, Garrett, joining us on the show today. We're talking a little football, Garrett. So we were talking a little NCAA football last segment. So, you know, finish up your thoughts on that. And if you want to talk a little NFL, we can look at next year's Super Bowl odds, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So going in, to sum up my final thoughts on the college football, I want to say that I think next year is going to be an exciting year. You have Ohio State up back, Penn State, Michigan, just in the Big Ten alone. Not to mention Alabama is going to be there, USC with Sam Donald. So I think that's something fans can really look forward to. And when you're going to look at, here's what I kind of always gauged teams going into the year. One, who is their coach? You need to have an elite coach. Two, do they have a transcendent player? So you look back, you have Deshaun Watson this year. For Ohio State, you had Zeke Elliott. Alabama, Derrick Henry. I mean, those guys are either Heisman winners, Heisman finalists, big-time NFL guys. And then you need to also have a top-10 recruiting class. So I think that's something that people really need to look into. Is your team getting a top-10 recruiting class every single year? Do I have a good coach, and do we have that player? And then if you guys do, then you have a good chance of winning the championship.
Absolutely. And I think going off of what Garrett said earlier in this segment as well as in the last segment, it was awesome this year of football. And it was cool to see Ohio State compete. They were young, the freshmen, the sophomores that were competing on that team. And I think this goes for both levels, the NFL and college football. I think there's a lot of young talent in both leagues. I think it's going to grow over time. I think we saw the more experienced teams get the W's when it came down to the championships this year. But football's growing, and that's what makes me super excited about next year. And you can say, Roz, how is football growing? It's already the biggest sport in America, but it's more of like a bounce back grow because we were worried the ratings were down. I think in large part that was because of our hometown teams, Xander. The Cubs were just dominating baseball, but the numbers were down for football, and it's a violent sport. People are worried about this concussions. Concussions were down, though, percentage-wise this year. I think this was a very important year, a very important finish for both the NCAA and the NFL, so I'm very excited for what's to come. Obviously, when I'm thinking about the future for the NFL, I'm thinking Ted Thompson, holy hell, please bring some free agent in to help Aaron Rodgers. And not even on the offense, just bring in a defensive guy, dear God, or whatever you believe in. But I need that for the Packers to be successful moving forward. They said it all week on ESPN and on Fox Sport. The NFC's great. Next year's going to be fun. The Cowboys are going to be right back there. Seattle's going to be great. The Packers, of course. And then this Atlanta team, they can only go higher. Keep watching for your favorite team, Wits. I know you love Eli Manning. I don't think the Giants are just done yet. And then we got Carson Palmer coming back. Maybe he has a bounce back year again. I know he's kind of a flaky guy, but we'll see. So bounce back. I love football. I'm sad it's going away. And Xander, I'm kind of curious to see what you have to say about your piece with football.
Yeah, you know what? I could really give a shit about the ratings because I'm going to watch football until the day that I pass away or if it gets taken away from me first. But I am really excited for next year. I mean, I think the most interesting thing about, you know, the NFL is you see some of the teams that finished the last year on top sometimes have off years. And if you look at three teams that you saw that in this year, was the Denver Broncos, the Arizona Cardinals, and the Carolina Panthers. I mean, these were three elite teams, two of them Super Bowl teams last year, and they absolutely shit the bed. They had awful years. Carson Palmer was not right the entire year. Cam Newton also. I mean, he was in the news more, you know, crying about fouls than he was about winning games, and the Denver Broncos could not get anything going at the quarterback position. I mean, the last year combo of Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler, I think, was better than Trevor Siemian last year and Paxton Lynch. So that's an interesting thing to watch. I mean, the Atlanta Falcons are such a talented team, but, you know, I don't know what it's like losing a Super Bowl. I have no idea, but I know that it's got to be tough, and especially being up that big in a game, you know, the biggest, arguably the biggest prize in sports. You know what? I could see him having an off year next year. I don't really think it's going to happen. I think the offense is too talented, but it's really hard to repeat. And that's what makes the Patriots so great, is their ability to get back to the big game. You know, for the past 15 years, they've been in the AFC Championship game almost every other year. I mean, it's, I think, 7 or 8 times. So it's been, you know, a fantastic run for them. But the team I'm watching out for next year is the Cowboys. I mean, I think, you know, they were right there with the Packers, and they were so close to beating them. And I would really like to see them win, because I thought they matched up a lot better with the Falcons compared to the Packers. I mean, I thought the defense was much better, and they had the ability to control the clock. You know, unlike the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, I mean, they basically relied on his right arm. So that makes it hard to control the ball, control the clock, and that game just got really out of hand. So the Cowboys are a team to watch next year, and I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Tony Romo. I mean, Dak Prescott, I think, hands down, has to be the quarterback of the future there. And it'll be interesting to see what, Tony Romo's dad, Jerry Jones, is going to do about it. Because Tony Romo, is a very valuable asset in the NFL. I mean, there's so many teams out there who do not have a capable quarterback. And, you know, I know the guy's old, and I know the guy's been hurt a lot, but he has shown that he can be a top-10 quarterback. So it'll be a really interesting next year. And there's going to be some teams that are going to come out and surprise you. I mean, I think the Chiefs and the Raiders are two teams to watch out for next year. You know, I'm not going to say anything about the Bears, because they've got, about a decade to get back.
They're terrible, dude. I'm sorry.
But, you know, it was a great year. I enjoyed myself. I won and lost a lot of money through the 20-week season, and, you know, I can't wait till it comes back.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the Atlanta Falcons might have a little bit of a hangover coming this Super Bowl, and I think you might know where I'm going with this. I'm really picking at straws here, but I think there's a team right now in the NBA, other than their star player, the rest of their team has a little bit of a hangover still from winning the NBA championship last year. It's been a little bit of a struggle this January and early February for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I know my man sitting to my left here, Garrett Haywood, is a massive, massive Cavalier fan, and I need him to back up LeBron James somehow. I need him to tell us, the Sporting Edge listeners, how this Cavs team is going to compete with Kevin Durant now on the Warriors.
Yeah, I think it's one easy answer and a shirtless answer in that J.R. Smith. the man is out right now. He's coming back right before playoff time. He just has a new baby, I believe, baby girl. He's getting refocused.
Huge, that's huge.
And I think with the combination of Kyrie, JR, and Kyle Korver, and then, of course, you throw LeBron and K-Love or Tristan in there. I mean, think about that shooting arsenal you have back there that can compete and maybe even outshoot the Warriors on any night. So I think you got to look at size. You have LeBron and Tristan banging down low. The Warriors only got thinner and smaller by trading away Bogut, and then Barnes was also a big rebounder for them. So I like the chances. I'm not worried right now. I think it's February something. I can't even tell the date. And I think LeBron is going to gather the troops after the All-Star break and be like, all right, boys, it is time to roll our sleeves back up and get back to work.
Yeah, Garrett's a true Cavs fan there. He doesn't even know the date, because if you're any bit of a Cavs or NBA fan, you really know that nobody gives a crap until April or June when the NBA Finals is going on. So, Garrett, I agree. And it's interesting you brought up the fact that they're without Bogut now, and that this Warriors team's smaller. I think they're faster. And here's something interesting that was proposed to me. What if Tristan Thompson, massive contract, the contract that matches the likes of somebody like Carmelo Anthony? Carmelo hates New York. Phil Jackson is ruining New York, and James Dolan just kicked Charles Oakley up.
Carmelo is too. Let's not put all the blame on Phil Jackson.
I'm going to put a lot of the blame on Phil Jackson. I think he's an elitist. I think that this is just going the wrong direction. He wanted to step back into the NBA. It was not his place. But I think it's time for Melo to join the Cavs. I think it'll put Melo in a position he's never been in before, which is not a bad thing. I think Melo can just be that pure scorer, but he doesn't need to bring the ball up every time. And doesn't need to have the ball in his hand, because it'll be Kyrie and LeBron's job. So, Garrett, this is what I have to offer you. Pretend you're James Dolan. I'm offering you Tristan Thompson, Iman Shumpert, and we'll give you a draft pick, maybe a second rounder, and I want Carmelo. Are you taking this deal?
I got a message for everyone asking this question. Carmelo Anthony himself, Cavs Nation does not want you. We do not want you here. I think with Tristan, especially, we got a young guy. We would never trade him away. He is a heart and soul with Cleveland. He rolls with LeBron. He's dating a Kardashian now. So
LeBron hated that.
Hey, it brings some star factor to the team. So Tristan Starr is on the rise, Melo is on the fall. Okay. Now, I'm going to throw a trade out to you guys, and I want to hear what you want to think about this. I'm going to throw Kevin Love and maybe Amon Shumpert for Boogie Cousins. Now, that is a guy that is stuck on a bad team. He obviously has had his problems, but I think under LeBron's leadership, and now he also has Tyronn Lue, a more bigger spotlight, he's going to be more focused. I think he can come in for the Cavs, and he can bully any Warrior out of the paint and dominate on any night. And that is something that they're not ready for, and they're not built to withstand in a series.
Absolutely, and I like that trade. And Xander, I'm very confident I know what you think too, but I'll let you rip that one because we love DeMarcus Cousins and the way he plays basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I love that trade, but I don't think the Kings would do that. I mean, I think there's too much value in Boogie Cousins. And, you know, to get Kevin Love and Amon Shumpert, I mean, you know, Kevin Love, is pretty good, but I just don't think the Kings are going to give up Boogie Cousins unless they get some, you know, some amazing value, which I don't think they're going to find with the Cavs. But we'll talk about it a little more next segment. If you miss the show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm. I'm here with Roz and our friend Garrett Haywood. We'll be back after the break. See ya. What's up, everybody? We're back here, Sporting Edge. I want to thank Garrett for coming on the show today. A real knowledgeable guy. We're going to have him on again very soon, along with our buddy Mike Straface. But I'm back here. It's just me and Roz. And Roz, I wanted to touch on that trade again. I mean, it sounded like an awesome trade for the Cavs, but, you know, I think the Kings are only going to get rid of Boogie Cousins if they get the Kings ransom for him, because he's such a talented player. Obviously a huge headache, and I know they've said they want to keep him around, but, you know, the more he gets, you know, deeper into the technical fouls and just, like, the overall lack of whatever you want to call it for the game of basketball, you know, it's tough. And he's a great player, but obviously I think comes with quite a bit of baggage.
Yeah, he does come with the baggage, but I don't think that's important when he goes to another team. The only issue is ownership this week recently said that Boogie will not be leaving before the trade deadline. I think the only chance he's leaving is when his contract finally expires. And we hope to see him partner up with a nice point guard. And I think it's looking even nicer in Boston. Isaiah Thomas really kind of being a freak. He is continuing to put up these points day after day. I think that's a good landing spot.
I love Isaiah Thomas. He puts up a ton of points, but interesting metric. He is the worst defensive player in the NBA right now.
Really?
Yeah.
So, worse than Carmelo.
Worse than Carmelo. Kind of hard to believe.
That is hard to believe. But then, like I'm saying, put him with get Russell Westbrook. Send him to OKC. I don't know whoever wants to go to OKC, but spend a year there, win a championship with Russell. Kevin Durant promised he'd come back to OKC. That could be a dynamic threesome right there. Boogie,
I don't know if
KD, and Russ. Well, we'll find out.
Russell accepted.
We'll find out. It was exciting. They played each other last night, Friday night. Kevin Durant had his first game back in OKC, so it's we'll see. We'll see in the coming weeks what he thought about his performance playing there and what he felt about the crowd and their reaction to him being there. But I think we've hit the NBA on the head. I make this joke every time we talk about the NBA. What does it matter, Xander? Me and you are going to be talking in April. We have the show in April. It's going to be Warriors Cavs. You want some college basketball? Thank God. Well, we're gonna do Xander's segment in a little bit. He's got a comeback segment, but we're gonna run through a little college basketball first. It was exciting. 2 days ago was just an awesome. Let me say, awesome day of college basketball. I was gambling again. I was winning again. I know it sounds like the highs and lows go with my gambling, but had I even lost these games, I would have loved what came out of it and what occurred. We had games like Purdue versus Indiana at Indiana. Purdue taken down to the wire, and they come out, cover that spread, get the W on the road at a team that just got Justin Blackman back. Indiana is going to struggle to get back into the tournament, but I think that was a hard-fought game by them, and I think it was a nice, nice win for Purdue. I've been loving the Big Ten. That's 3 weeks in a row, Xander, that I've been on the Big Ten. I'm sorry for Northwestern. They had a rough week. I'm hoping they bounce back. They could really use the win. They play Wisconsin today. So we're all on Northwestern. We're from the northern suburbs of Chicago, so we're going on Northwestern. I know that's not even their cheer. But back to that Thursday game, we got wins from UCLA at home against Oregon. That's a little bit of a fire back after that blown loss.
I mean, well, to come back from 20 points, I mean, Lonzo Ball made a pretty damn good case about being player of the year.
And what have I said? The guy's amazing. The guy's amazing.
Yeah. His brother, though.
92 points. I just watched the video. I watched the video of it, and his two brothers are nasty, nasty ball players. This ball family is going to be one for the ages. All three of them are NBA prospects. The LaMelo, the youngest one, needs to grow a little bit, but again, he's 15 years old. He's got time to grow.
I don't think I've scored 92 points in my entire life, so in a 32-minute game, it is pretty impressive.
It generally takes me two games to score 92 points, so still...
But you're taking like 150 shots.
That's fair.
He only did it in about 40.
You're right, and he probably looked better than me doing it, although I could fly to the rim. He can't dunk yet. That's a big knock on him. Lonzo Ball loves making fun of the fact that LaMelo is 6'3", still can't dunk, and Lonzo's throwing down one-handed dunks off the rebound. I mean, it's impressive. So, like you said, that 20-point comeback.
I got two games that I wanted to ask your opinion today.
Fine, absolutely. So,
this is a game that we looked at a couple weeks ago. Gonzaga, number one team in the nation, going to St. Mary's. Number 20 right now. But a lot of people think this is going to be a tough game for the Zags. I mean, I know they're number one, but a tough in-conference game. Who you got today?
So, my pick today is it's going to be Gonzaga. I get really mad when Wits asks me these questions. I'm sorry, Sporting Edge people. I might as well go on a Roz rant at some point in my life about how much I dislike Gonzaga. And I love the coach. It's Mark Few, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, love the guy. Awesome coach. I wish he would go to a big program and just absolutely dominate there. But so Gonzaga's won their last two games by 30-plus, and they're going on the road. They've played St. Mary's this year where they beat them by 20. It's not that far of a travel. You're staying on the West Coast. Gonzaga's not concerned. St. Mary's is ranked, but I'm still confused how they're ranked. I still think Northwestern's been more impressive than St. Mary's. I don't know what's impressive about that conference. So I'm perplexed. I'm taking Gonzaga. I hope you're doing it too because you seem to like these guys because you bring them up a lot. Gonzaga's going to go on the road.
Team, baby. You got to bring them up.
Yeah, God, it is just brutal. But gosh, I will start using because not all of our listeners might not believe in God. But you know what? I got to go Gonzaga. I'm upset about it, but I'm curious to see your next game. We're going to say Gonzaga by 11, so that's okay for all you guys out there betting the game.
My next game, two similar seed matchups, number 2 Villanova versus number 24 Xavier. I think this is also an interesting game because Xavier – you know, they were up near the top at the beginning of the year and have kind of fallen off. You know, 17-6, respectable, but you know they were creeping near the top 10, and I think they could give Villanova a pretty good game here.
Yeah, I agree, and I only agree for one reason. I only agree because Villanova's traveling. Villanova's not been bad on the road. I think they've played very well. That Marquette loss was, I think, the biggest fluke of all time. They're up 13 with 6 minutes to go, and Marquette pulled it off. I think that Xavier is an interesting team, like you said. This is a team that has not been able to come together as a whole like they did last year. They were ranked higher up last year, were playing better ball last year. But why they've struggled is a lot of injuries, a lot of issues with team camaraderie, some players leaving. I think Villanova goes on the road again. I hate taking the road team, so please, please, everyone listening, do not gamble road teams often. You can do it. They are winners occasionally, but I'm not going to tell you to bet Villanova in this game. I'm going to tell you I think Villanova wins. I think Villanova takes this game by seven or 8 points. So that's kind of what I'm working with here. I think those are two great games. I do want everybody to watch them. There's a ton of great games coming up this week. We've got Kansas playing at Texas Tech. That's a tough road game. Louisville, Miami. Miami's a freak ACC team. I think Louisville's going to win. It's at home. Like I said, top five matchups all over the place. I think it's going to be a very exciting day today in college basketball.
Yeah, I agree. But I wanted to quickly get to my comeback of the week. Steve Sarkisian. August of 2015 was the start of the end for him at USC. And a little less than 2 years later, the man finds himself as the offensive coordinator for the Super Bowl runner-ups. I mean, if that isn't one of the most remarkable comebacks you have ever seen. You know, after Steve Sarkisian went to, you know, coaching rehab at Alabama, and got all the way up, you know, started there as an analyst and ended up being the offensive coordinator for the Crimson Tide in that championship game. And the offense did not look great. I'm not putting that on him. You know, freshman quarterback, a lot of variables there. But, I mean, for a year and a half's work, not bad going from being fired at USC to being the offensive coordinator for the best offense in the NFL.
Atlanta's got a lot of good bars. I'd just say watch out for another bender. I think it's lame that he left. I know. I don't like Sarkisian, but I think it's sad that he left Alabama, a program where he's going to actually win some national titles. I know what you think. You love it. It's a great comeback story and all, but me and you are opposite ends of this. This would just be an explosive argument that the fans would hopefully like to hear, but that's all the time we've got this week. This is Wits and Roz here at Sporting Edge on LibertyTalk.fm. Please reach out to us. We want to do a segment having your tweets on the show. I'm at Roz for Roz, R-O-Z for R-O-Z. Yes, that's Roz. And then we've got Wits.
Dandyboy13, X-A-N-D-Y-B-O-I-1-3.
Thank you so much, everybody. We'll see you next week here at the Sporting Edge.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.